I'm Nadia Taylor, Training and Exercise Manager for the Readiness Support Center. And this is Semper Gumby, a podcast about emergency management in the Corps of Engineers. We'll cover topics about disaster response and recovery, FEMA mission assignments, and Corps-specific response authorities under which we operate for things like flood fighting and coastal emergencies. Today, to mark the 11th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, we're going to do something a little bit different than our usual episode about a single emergency management topic. Instead, we have for you a collection of stories from a handful of USACE responders about their deployments in Mississippi and Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Now, we've collected these stories throughout the past few months, but hearing them again all together somehow sounds different to me now, considering the recent flooding once again in southern Louisiana. USACE, in support of the federal response, is in fact right now supporting the state of Louisiana as it responds to and recovers from this historic flooding. But in the meantime, we hope you'll have time to listen to these deployment stories and hear the real, meaningful difference that one person can make.
We are facing a storm that most of us have feared. I do not want to create panic, but I do want the citizens to understand that this is very serious. The storm surge most likely will topple our levee system.
This is considered by all those that do the tabletop exercises and run the computer modeling to potentially be the 1-in-500-year event for New Orleans. That's how they look at it here. As far as the evacuations go, the mayor has said that they were able to get about 1 million people out of the metropolitan area. Those who could not get out, and that may be a number in the estimated to be about 100,000, are still here in the city. People who simply have no means, no transportation, no wherewithal to get out. There are at least 12,000 of them in the Superdome behind me.
First, we'll hear from C.J. Hamilton, currently a local government liaison. In 2005, C.J. deployed to Mississippi in support of the temporary roofing mission. We'll let him tell you the rest.
Well, Hurricane Katrina was my very first deployment, and to be honest, I didn't even know the Corps did the emergency management responsibilities that we do. I didn't know about the different response teams that we have, nothing. All I know is I was watching on TV, and I saw the devastation, and I talked to my wife and said, I would like to sign up and volunteer because they were needing volunteers for anything. And so I sort of signed a list of send me to do anything. And they called me to be a roofing QA supervisor for the Blue Roof Program. And so I went down there and did that in the Biloxi and Gulfport area. Oh, you know, to see that kind of devastation, you know, I'd watched it on TV, but it just reminded me of those old Vietnam movies where the guys are flying into Vietnam and they're laughing and joking and fooling around, and then they hit the ground and all of a sudden it hits them. And that's the way it was. They drove us down on the coast first, and all of us guys who were laughing and carry on, it just got quiet because it was horribly, horribly devastating. And so it was a very solemn atmosphere, and they trained us up quickly, told us how to measure for roofs, and we went out and we were measuring the damage on roofs and trying to get the work over to the contractor and inspecting the contractor when they were putting the blue roofs on. And I think we put 30,000 of them on before it was over with. But I just did that in the beginning. And then I sort of made this mistake at a meeting of putting out a few suggestions one time. And then all of a sudden they said, oh, you seem like the kind of guy we could put in charge of an office. And they sent me over to Biloxi. And before I know it, I had 17 people under me. And I was doing work like I was doing back at home and trying to coordinate everybody's schedules and work efforts and keeping up with the contractor there as well. And then I worked in Gulfport too. But it was really great to watch the map we had turn from red, which was all the properties we had to do, to slowly half green and half red, and then to turn almost all green at the end. And I just heard so many stories, because when you go to a homeowner's house and they're still living in it and you're going to put a roof over their head, it's so incredibly satisfying to them that now water's not going to leak in their house. And they about always told you their story, and they hugged you, or they gave you cookies, or they cried, and sometimes you cried too. And I remember when I left and I drove across the bridge I was actually staying in the casino down there that they'd converted, and all those emotions flooded into my head and into my heart when I drove across to leave after spending 60 days down there. And I just cried, just those tears, the salty ones that, you know, when your grandma dies kind of thing. And it was just, sometimes you can just get so wrapped up in these big disasters. And that's what sort of got me excited about disaster work in the future and really led to me becoming an LGO.
The storm moved directly east of New Orleans in a pretty much south-to-north fashion. All night long, it was headed to the south of New Orleans, and about midnight, maybe about 11 o'clock last night, this thing made a right-hand turn. There were gusts on the eastern side of this storm to 140, and even sustained winds possibly to 140 over around Slidell all the way over to Gulfport.
This is what it's like in downtown New Orleans right now. And stuff is flying down the street. These are the hurricane force winds. Reporting from the hurricane in New Orleans. Come on, let's go for cover.
Next up is Todd Miller. Todd is also currently a local government liaison. He deployed to Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, also in support of the temporary roofing mission.
Well, I remember we were on vacation in North Carolina when Katrina came in, and I was watching the devastation on TV, and it was horrific. It touched me personally because that's where I joined the Corps of Engineers, was in New Orleans. So we lived there for a year and a half, and my wife and I sat there watching this going, oh, look at that place, look at that place. And we were reminiscing as we're looking at all this destruction. And so I immediately put a call in to our emergency operations center in Norfolk, where I was currently stationed. And I said, is there anything I can do? I'd like to volunteer. I'd like to go back. And they found a job for me being a roofing QA. And so I deployed out and headed on down there. And it was very emotional to go to a place that I lived. And I drove around daily. And I had close friends still there and neighbors who were personally affected. And I tried to call them, but they were all evacuated. So it was very hard for me to actually gear up and get going because I was trying to deal with all these emotions. So I got into the job and it was very fast-paced work. And I guess I got caught standing around with a dumb look on my face one day, and they made me the resident engineer for Northern Jefferson Parish. So I operated an office out of there doing the Blue Roof program. And we actually started to wrap it up and close that office as we completed our mission and we turned what little we had over to another resident engineer. And I just remember all those people and all the different scenarios that we went through trying to get this mission completed. And we actually had a helicopter ride that took some resident engineers up to map some of the areas that were still left. And one of the most poignant moments for me was when that helicopter took off and we started to ascend above New Orleans, and I just saw the sea of blue. And now I'd been looking at the numbers for weeks, but it didn't strike home for me until I saw that blue. And I thought, wow, we've done a lot of work here and there's a lot of damage. And that very day, I knew that we were doing good work.
There are reports from New Orleans of people trapped in buildings that have come down around them. They have made desperate calls to 911 asking for help, asking for rescue, but the rescuers can't get out. It's simply too dangerous right now.
What we have seen is a lot of flooding all over the city. Many areas are completely impassable. We just can't drive down the roads. We are also seeing trees down, power lines down, lights down, the rain continues to pour, and the winds gusty.
Patsy Fletcher tells her story next. Patsy is a member of the Emergency Support Function 3 permanent cadre now, but back in 2005, she was the emergency management chief in the Memphis district. Patsy, as you'll hear, had the enormous task of managing the FEMA mission assignments in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina.
I served as the emergency manager for Memphis District. I actually started serving that position in 2003. We already had a plan in place for a Louisiana hurricane. If anything happened state of Louisiana, we would go in and start executing FEMA mission assignments until New Orleans District could take back over. We actually received FEMA mission assignments prior to landfall. We had pre-declaration mission assignments for basically the full suite of FEMA missions. We declared the emergency, I believe it was the Thursday before, and started bringing in the planning and response teams. The action officers for the teams were going to Baton Rouge. We had made arrangements where we could set up basically a forward, an advanced RFO party utilizing DTOS equipment, Deployable Tactical Operation System equipment, at Port Allen It's one of New Orleans District's facilities. And the commander would go down with key leaders such as real estate, security, the chief of operations, and basically the action officers from the planning response teams. That was the plan. So the action officers were going on down into Baton Rouge area, Port Allen area, but the other team members were coming through Memphis. So we started receiving them actually the Friday and Saturday before that. The day of landfall, actually, there was probably 30 minutes to an hour where everything seemed okay. We actually had the unwatering team from New Orleans had come to Memphis, and they were set up in a conference room across the hall from our emergency operations center. And after Katrina hit, it was almost all clear. We almost had time to take that sigh of relief when suddenly we heard about the reports about the levees breaking. So what was almost a sigh of relief turned into the flood fight and trying to assist New Orleans District, because they did have people still there and they were attempting to flood fight the levee breaks, and seeing that unfold. It was life-changing. Well, you know, as I stated, it started several days before and we were already working very, very long hours. Maybe getting, you know, 6 hours sleep was a good thing, even at that point before we deployed forward. For years during those tabletop exercises, I've described a recovery field office, but I had described that to many of my commanders as we went through the tabletop exercises as a mini district. It was not a mini district. The recovery field office that was set up and established in the Baton Rouge area for Louisiana, of course, you got to realize same thing was happening in Mississippi. The Vicksburg district was setting up that recovery field office. But I'd looked at the numbers one time, and we went from zero to it was either like 1,217 or 1,271 people in, I think, the first 3 weeks following the storm. So at times frantic. The pace of it was incredible, and there just comes a point where you have to realize that it's not a sprint. It's going to be a marathon. It's going to be the long-term recovery. The plan that we had written in 1999 called for the New Orleans District to take over the FEMA mission execution after 60 days. However, it became evident pretty soon after the event that that probably was not going to happen, that they were going to focus on the core authorities, the 8499, rebuilding the levees and looking at the whole system. So we had a recovery field office for 2 years. There were times when my husband could not get in touch with me just because of the pace that we had, and he started actually having to email friends that were also deployed. And he would say, just, is she there? Is she breathing still? Is she okay? So it was that kind of pace, though, that you were lucky sometimes to get something at a drive-thru on the way back to the hotel at night. So lasting memories that I don't think I will ever forget. I think sometimes people get tired of hearing my stories from Katrina. But as I said, it was really kind of life-changing because you see those things unfolding, and sometimes you can see where things are going wrong, and there's nothing you can do to stop them. You can just try to prepare better because you know what's about to happen.
Downtown Gulfport looks like a bomb went off. Buildings lie in rubble. Whole neighborhoods are obliterated. Power lines strewn through the streets, and the Port of Mississippi is a wreck. Katrina took the casino barges that lined this coast and tossed them on the shore like toys, crushing homes beneath them. 1 million people along this coast are without power. Tens of thousands have been left homeless. Officials say it will be at least a week before those who evacuated will be able to return. For some, there is nothing to come home to. So much has been lost here, and people are still reckoning the damage. In Biloxi, where a 25-foot wall of water came ashore, the city's waterfront was demolished.
The next story from Carrie Kennedy is a really touching vignette of a small moment with a big impact. Carrie deployed to Louisiana in support of the debris mission.
There are a lot of lasting memories from Katrina, but one that stands out in my mind was in the Ninth Ward. When I was driving around trying to get an assessment of the debris and the situation down there to plan the contracts and the contract vehicles that we would use to help the community. And as I'm driving around, I came upon this house. So it used to be a house. All that remained was a stoop.
and there was a lady sitting by herself on the stoop. And I stopped and I walked over to her just to see if there's anything I could do for her, and sat down beside her and asked her, is there anything that you need? Is there anything I can do for you? And she said, do you have a bottle of water? So that memory sticks with me, and I gave her a bottle of water, and she had tears in her eyes. Something so simple as a bottle of water meant so much to her. That's all she needed. And to be able to help her and give her that bottle, it meant something to her and it meant something to me. Sometimes we have to take ourselves out of why we're there, and we're all humans and we're there to take care of the victims, however that is, however big or small that is. So that was one way that I was able to help her, and it's left a lasting impression with me.
The city that sits below sea level is now undersea. People who thought they were unscathed by Katrina woke up to rising floodwaters. The city is now cut off from the outside. The main I-10 bridge to the east, shredded by Katrina's storm surge. Other access routes underwater. Officials estimate that 80% of New Orleans is now underwater. Helicopters spent the day on a virtual house-to-house search from the air, looking for stranded families. Coast Guard choppers hovered over houses and delicately lowered rescue baskets, winching stranded survivors one by one. National Guard teams carefully lifted people into the air on rescue seats. On the ground, a different picture. Boats lined up with families rescued from second stories, attics, and rooftops.
Finally, we'll hear from Joel Hendricks. Joel is currently the Readiness and Contingency Operations Chief for the South Atlantic Division. He deployed to Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina when he was the Emergency Management Chief in the Honolulu District.
Well, at the time of Katrina, I was the Chief of Emergency Management in Honolulu District, and I got a call asking if I could deploy as an assistant team leader to Baton Rouge. And this was the day of the storm, and we were watching it on CNN. We were going to be what we now call local government liaisons. And because I had some experience, I was fortunate to get assigned to St. Bernard Parish. St. Bernard was where the eye of the hurricane went through first, as it then impacted a little bit of New Orleans, but really went into Mississippi after that. At that point, St. Bernard was about 95% underwater because it had gotten flooded. The levees had done their business, but it had gotten overtopped as the storm had come through. And so basically the whole parish was flooded except an area around near the Mississippi River. We left there probably about 10 o'clock that night and went back and found accommodations across the river from New Orleans. That was where the folks from the power restoration, the pole climbers and stuff, were camping out. So we got a room there. I only had about 3 inches of water on the floor. It was a second floor. And that's where I stayed for the next couple months and then commuted into St. Bernard, getting a ride from the sheriff's launch across the river. When I was there at that point, St. Bernard had no communications with Baton Rouge and didn't for about a week. And needless to say, the parish president was a little bit unhappy about that. It turned out that, you know, their first priority was to get the water down. So they were interested in when that would happen. And so I got in touch with the New Orleans district, which had several employees in the district lived in St. Bernard Parish, and were asking about their houses. So the couple that I were talking to, I went was able to go by in a boat and see that their houses were flooded up to the eaves of the roof, and told them that I didn't think their houses were going to be habitable because they were flooded up to the roof eaves. And they appreciated that, but you could tell the disappointment and sadness, because even if you had insurance, you lost everything you had, and not everybody had insurance. The Corps was able to pump the water out, do an unwatering and dewatering, and get back to dry land after about 10 days. And then we had another hurricane came through. That kind of stopped progress we were making. Folks were being gradually let back in to see their community and what they were going to do to it. We had eventually got a mobile DRC, which is a lot like our DTOS units, came in, and that became my office, which was across from a Walmart that had been open for about 2 weeks before it got flooded up to the roof. It was really enjoyable working with the parish people because I was there the whole time. Me and one other FEMA person were there the whole time, and we were what now is a geographic branch. At that point, that wasn't really part of the lexicon, nor were LGLs, which is effectively what I was doing down there as an ATL. And occasionally, I'd go into New Orleans, and then at the end of the month, I went up to Baton Rouge to report in that I was lost down in St. Bernard Parish and tell them what was going on down there. I was able to do emails by going back to my hotel and getting on MiFi, which was brand new thing at the time, but there was only one cell tower, and you had to wait till midnight because you didn't have enough signal strength to really get on. Somebody would bump you off and stuff, but data works a whole lot better than voice when you're doing that. It was really an enjoyable time because you got to be part of watching people lead their community and watching them make heart-rending decisions about what it was going to become, because their community could do anything but go back to being what it was. Ultimately, about every third house would not be rebuilt or inhabited, but they had to make those decisions on what they wanted it to be. What did they want it to look like? And it was really tough to watch them do it, but every day they'd make progress. And every day you got to see the resiliency of human spirit, the little things that mattered.
That's all we have for today. Hopefully you've heard the real and lasting impacts, both professional and personal, that disaster response deployments can have for our volunteers. Thank you to our volunteers for all that you do. I'm Nadia Taylor, and this is Semper Gumby.